You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including federal funding impacts on rural schools, staff cuts to a program helping low-income residents pay their utility bills, and a baseball team possibly moving to Medford. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Roman Battaglia, politics, environment, and sports reporter.
Welcome all. Jane, you wrote a story this week about states possibly losing secure rural schools funding. First off, tell us what that is.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a mouthful, a lot of S's in there. But the Secure Rural Schools program is run sort of through the Forest Service, and it basically provides financial support for rural counties throughout the country for things like schools and roads. It's specifically for rural counties that have a lot of federal land, which is exempt from taxes. So basically, federal government's trying to make up for that. You know, you can't get any tax dollars off this land, so here's a little bit of money. This act was originally passed in 1908 and then sort of reauthorized in the year 2000. And so it's been around for quite a while. And just to give you kind of a sense, last year SRS gave over $230 million to 41 states and 745 counties throughout the country. So it has a pretty broad reach.
Yeah, definitely widespread. So why might these states and counties not get money this year?
The bill is basically still just languishing in Congress. It hasn't been approved yet. The funding hasn't been approved. So the clock is kind of ticking, and I talked to some superintendents and other community leaders this week who are getting a little bit worried about that. I talked to Derek DeGroot, who's the Klamath County Commissioner, earlier this week, and he was actually in Washington, D.C., advocating for this funding to be passed. And then I also talked to some superintendents who were talking about how they think this SRS money shouldn't be the kind of thing that has to be reallocated by Congress every few years. You know, they have to go back and advocate for it again. And they would rather see it be sort of more sustainable, more dependable, and also not vary so much year to year. They never quite know exactly how much money they're getting. And so they would like it to be more reliable so they could better plan for how much money they're going to have and know that they're going to get it every year. But that's not the case right now.
So what happens if this money doesn't come through?
It could have obviously a really big impact first on schools, especially smaller school districts that might really rely on that funding. So, for example, I talked to Jamie Green, who's the superintendent of the Trinity Alps Unified School District, which is in Weaverville, California. And he says his district uses this money basically for things like maintenance and transportation. And so they've already budgeted a little bit in case there's a funding gap there. But he said it won't last forever, obviously. So you can let a bus get a little bit older, put off some maintenance. You can patch the roofs instead of redoing them. But eventually, you're going to have to make those changes, redo that roof, fix that bus, whatever it is. And so sort of long term, that could be a big problem for the district. So he's still sort of hopeful that the money will come through.
And despite its name, it affects more than just rural schools, right?
Yes, it does. So also counties. So like I said, I talked to Derek DeGroot, who's a commissioner in Klamath County. And Klamath County receives about $6 million a year from Secure Rural Schools. And so DeGroot says if they don't get that money, they basically would no longer be able to have a sheriff's patrol division. So that department is basically entirely supported by SRS money. If that money doesn't come through, DeGroot says that basically the Sheriff's Patrol Division would have to be cut in its entirety. He told me recently he was feeling a little bit more hopeful in D.C. He had talked to staff with the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was a little bit more hopeful it would come up for a vote. So we'll just have to see if Congress ends up passing that or not. So TBD.
As many stories are.
Yes.
Justin, you covered a shakeup at kind of another federal level program that provides utility assistance. Tell us about this program and how it might affect people locally.
Yeah, so this is called the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, or LIHEAP. And this was created by Congress back in the 80s in 1981. And like the name implies, it basically helps people. It provides help to low-income residents to pay their heating bill or electricity, utilities like that. It can also provide funds to weatherize your home, so you save money on utilities. And it's pretty popular. In 2023, nearly 6 million households used this. They enrolled in it. And this month, the new Health and Human Services Secretary, RFK, did this massive restructuring with under his department, the HHS, and around 10,000 employees were fired. We're not sure if, you know, those are temporary firings or layoffs or, you know, what the HHS will look like in the future, but included in those layoffs were around 24 or so employees working at LIHEAP, at that utility assistance
at the federal
program,
level.
At the federal level, right. And those staff were basically responsible for getting the federally appropriated funds, those are appropriated by Congress, to states that then give it to county providers, and eventually it makes it to residents.
So what's happening at the local organizations? Has anything changed?
I spoke with a local provider in Humboldt County, and they said so far everything is operating as normal, but it's just a very confusing time for them, which is kind of common nowadays, which, you know, something will happen on the federal level, and then we'll sort of have to wait to see if it sticks or how that trickles down and what the impacts are on the ground. But they are worried, and they have questions, namely how they'll get access to those federal funds when no one is in the federal office. The funds for this program, for this year, for this program, have already been appropriated by Congress, like I mentioned. That's over $4 billion in 2024. And it was appropriated in 2024 for this year.
Yeah.
And luckily for counties, over 90% of those funds have already made it to the states. So the majority of the funds already in states' hands. But it's unclear how the rest of it makes it to counties like Humboldt, or kind of what happens in the future if Congress appropriates funds to the program, but there's just no one in Washington to send that revenue out.
So how important is LIHEAP in an area like Humboldt County?
It's a popular program. So the Redwood Community Action Agency, that's the local provider in the county that enrolls residents, they say the program served over 4,000 households there since 2023. And the demand is actually higher than what they're able to supply to residents. So the funding they have is only enough to help less than 7% of the eligible population in Humboldt. So there are a lot more households that have income low enough where they would be eligible if there was enough money there.
So who is using LIHEAP right now?
So this program was especially important coming out of the pandemic because there was this moratorium on collecting utilities in California. People didn't pay their bills for a while because they didn't have to, but also because they were probably struggling economically. And those bills really got out of hand for some people. They would owe like thousands of dollars. And so this program helped with that. But also, you know, Humboldt is PG&E territory, and I'm sure people have noticed this, but electricity rates have climbed over the years, so electricity is becoming more expensive. So this program is especially helpful for, say, elderly folk on a fixed income who don't have extra income to spend on utilities. But again, so far the program is still available this year. Things are running normally, but we'll be following this in case something changes.
Well, thanks, Justin. And now for sports, a line I don't get to say too often. Roman, you brought us a sports story about a potential move by a minor league baseball team. Who's moving and where?
Yeah, the Eugene Emeralds team is looking at moving to Medford, and they're a high A Giants affiliated minor league baseball team, which I was told is important to mention. They've been around for about 70 years. And also, fun fact, they were named in a contest that was won by an 11-year-old who wanted to call them the Emeralds because Lane County has been called the Emerald Empire, and so that's why they're called the Emeralds. So they presented to the Medford City Council this week about their essential pitch to move here to Medford.
I hope that kid's gone on to a successful career in marketing.
Who knows?
Why are the Emeralds leaving Eugene?
Yeah, so there's these new regulations that took effect this season about stadiums for minor league teams, and the current stadium for the Emeralds is just not up to par to those. They currently operate out of PK Park, which is owned by the University of Oregon, and it's also used by their baseball team. According to the current general manager, there's only one locker room that they can't even use while the UO team is there, so they have to use trailers outside. He said it's really embarrassing for the team. So, you know, they've tried to build a new stadium. They got almost all of the funding, but then there was this bond measure for the last $15 million that was heavily rejected last year, and that basically forced them to look at possibly moving somewhere else. Because if they don't find a new location to play, they could lose their affiliation with the Giants, which would not be good for the team.
So what makes Medford so attractive?
Yeah, well, they think that Medford is the perfect market for a minor league team. Medford used to host a minor league baseball team, the Medford A's or the Timberjacks from 1979 to 99, but then they moved to Vancouver, BC. And so the general manager for the Emeralds thinks that Medford has shown its dedication to building community, and they recently built Rogue X, which is this giant events, recreation, and aquatic center that cost, I think, $70-something million. And then there's a bunch of other baseball fields they already have, so they'd be able to draw people from all over the Rogue Valley. They could also hold, you know, a lot of other events at the stadium. They mentioned, you know, concerts or haunted houses or boxing matches. I think the Eugene Emeralds are known for doing a lot of different community events.
Okay.
They partner with like the Boys and Girls Club, and they do a lot of different special events for different cultural things and stuff. They had a special Exploding Whale Day, I think, to celebrate.
Hopefully we could keep that tradition.
I know, I hope so. They had a whole mascot named Boomer, who was, you know, a giant whale. Which I hope they didn't explode at the end of the game. I don't know how that turned out.
I now need to venture up to Eugene to see this mascot before it's gone.
They also said that, you know, this would obviously bring in a lot of money for the city. It estimated it could generate $30 million in annual economic output, not like give to the city, but like generate in terms of people going to restaurants or staying in hotels or things like that. So it would bring in a lot of money along with extra tax revenue for the city.
Well, what has the city of Medford said about the move? How likely are we to see this come to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, the city council seemed really excited about it. So it was the previous mayor of Medford and now the county commissioner, Randy Sparacino, who first started the conversation about this move. There are, though, definitely concerns about the cost of building this stadium, which is estimated, you know, the stadium in Eugene was estimated to cost $90 million, which is a lot of money, and the city's not really sure how they would pay for that. We don't really know what the funding model would look like. There was one, you know, model that was looked at that was like the city and county would pay for half of it through a loan, and then, you know, the baseball team would pay them back over a period of time. There's also talk of like maybe getting some money from FEMA to designate it as an emergency operations center during wildfires or things like that. So we'll probably know in the next few months, because that's when the Eugene Emeralds need to have a decision. They kind of have to talk to the MLB about their plans for moving into compliance in terms of their stadium, you know, pretty soon.
So we'll probably be having this conversation at least a few more times.
Yeah.
Any ideas on what they'd be named if they moved to Medford?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, the Emeralds, you know, they said they would be open to a name change because I think the Medford Emeralds would probably be weird. We don't really have any association with Emeralds here. My vote was for the Medford Pears or the Pear Blossoms because we don't have a pear team here. There's the Medford Rogues.
And it's about time.
Yeah, I know. I think pears is the perfect name. I don't know. Does anyone else have any ideas? No?
Yeah. I like pear blossoms.
Okay. Pear blossoms?
Yeah. Pear blossoms.
Yankees.
The Yankees. Oh,
I don't think that would go over well with the Giants. You know? my other idea was the Medford Water Bears. Because the Bear Creek runs through Medford, so we could call them the Water Bears. And then the mascot could be a tardigrade, which is
would be like a giant gummy bear looking thing.
I know,
thing,
basically
maybe.
A giant gummy bear. That would be really cool. I think it'd be awesome.
I think the kids would go crazy for that. Well, you know, while we're talking about something fun right now, what we do every day here at JPR is a lot more serious. We bring you news and information that matters. And this is also the time of year where we ask you to give back to us and help you bring that information to us. Roman, how does someone do that?
Yeah, you can go to our website at ijpr.org/support, or you can call us at 888-552-6191. Obviously, we report on lots of different things here. Sometimes we report on sports, but you know, a lot of the time we report on a lot of other stuff, and it's really important, especially this month during our spring fun drive, to you know, support JPR and all of the work that we're doing.
Yeah, whether it's Jane covering like housing and homelessness issues, or education, or you covering politics and sports and environmental things, and Justin covering health and courts and all sorts of other stuff. We cover kind of the full gamut here. And I think it's really important to support what you use every day. And just give us a call, 888-552-6191, or go to ijpr.org. lifeinthenews.org/support. And that's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's also on our website, ijpr.org, and you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org, or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform.